Derek brought up Caravelle, I guess I'm going to go to that subject for a little bit. Because actually, in thinking about that, there's some parallels. And I also have some parallels with Lynn in that I headed up a memorial committee along with somebody else in this audience, the Lalmont Memorial Committee. And our goal was to create a monument, not quite on this grand a scale, but to recognize the, we'll say the original French, or the original bicycle patentee. Keep in mind that we're talking about the very first crude kind of bicycles that weighed something like 80 pounds with wooden wheels and pedals on the front hub. Anyway, Pierre Lalmont was a young French mechanic living in Paris. He emigrated to this country in 1865, and he brought the parts of a bicycle here. Settled in Ansonia, Connecticut, assembled his machine, went around the green in the spring of 66, caught the eye of an investor, and the following fall, by fall, they had the world's first patent describing the basic bicycle. And so some parallels with Major Taylor, I think, are that, well, obviously, Pierre Lalmont came from a humble background as well. They kind of reversed fortunes in a way. Oh, thanks, because Major Taylor would find really his most of his fame and fortune in France, whereas Lalmont, to the extent that he was recognized and made any money, that was over here. Anyway, so Pierre Lalmont did get the patent, but and he sold it prematurely before there was a wonderful outburst of excitement over this initial bicycle in the year 1869, and that gave him kind of a taste of fortune and fame, but he would eventually die in obscurity, as did Major Taylor, only in Boston, not Chicago. And so like Lynn, I felt, you know, this was somebody who needed some recognition. And, you know, our committee was not quite as successful. There is a plaque now on outside of the New Haven Green, very modest plaque, but nonetheless acknowledges the first recorded bicycle ride in the United States. And there's also a bicycle path on the southwest corridor of Park in Boston named after him. So we're proud of that, but I must say today was just a wonderful day, and to see such a wonderful tribute to Major Taylor was very moving. And I congratulate everybody who's worked so hard, especially Lynn. And I just think it's a wonderful thing for bicycle history. As far as my remarks go, I thought what I would do, since kind of my subject here is really the popularity of Major Taylor abroad. And as I think many people have observed, including Andrew Ritchie, that ironically, Major Taylor was probably or undoubtedly better received outside the United States than he was in the United States. And it's probably fair to say that no other country received him as well as France did. And in doing some research in France, I came across one of the interviews Major Taylor gave in 1907. So I just took some excerpts from that and translated it, which I'll read to you. But just to give you a little background, this was 6 years after his initial appearance in France, and at that time he was racing against the great French champion Jacques Plan, and they were drawing, I think, something like 30,000 or more fans at the track, the outdoor track at Parc des Princes. And of course, he was a tremendous celebrity at that time. He appeared the next few seasons in France, you know, always getting lots of press, and then he went to Australia, as you know, and then you had the birth of Sydney, and he kind of dropped out of the French scene for a while, and so 1907 was kind of his comeback year. And, like Michael Jordan, it turns out he made a few comebacks, but this was kind of his real retirement in the sense that when he stepped down, he was still at the top of his game. And so I thought this was just kind of an interesting interview here. So I'm just going to read it here. Again, just another part of the backdrop is when he actually appeared initially, he wasn't in very good shape, but, well, I think he kind of explains that, so I'll just read it here. My European contract, again, we're talking about the year 1907, he's writing now at the in the fall of 1907. My European contract was supposed to terminate at the end of June, but up to that point, I had not registered the slightest victory. To leave under such conditions would have been truly humiliating. I have excellent friends in America who would have rejoiced in these successive defeats. A little bit of sarcasm there. For that reason, and also on account of the unfair articles published upon my arrival in France, I decided to prolong my stay and return to Worcester only after I had exacted surprising revenge. Today, I have repeatedly beaten the best men of Europe. I can now pack my bags and head home. No one will make fun of this black man when he returns. Now I am going back to my country, where I will rediscover my fireplace and my small little house in Worcester. There's a photograph of it I noticed in the other room. Some have said that I am a rich man. Alas, no. I have a few dollars, that's true, enough to live quietly with my wife and my little Sydney, who is now almost a grown girl. I am going back home, and when I think back on all the happy hours I've spent in Europe, I will forget those unfair journalists who had no confidence in me this year, and remember only the praise and encouragement heaped upon me. I will tell my little girl that far away over in Paris are some friends who were very good to her father back when he raced around tracks on a bicycle, and Sydney will grow to appreciate the French. I'll have to question the family about how much of a Francophile Sydney was. But I think that concludes my remarks, so I'll take it over.